Hey, hello everybody, and welcome to the Drexel Basketball Podcast. We'll talk about a really successful week, men's and women's, this week. But first, we have a special guest. We have Robert Battle with us, and I told him I was going to save it till we started the conversation. But this is about as, for me personally, a special a player we could have. I think we're just talking three of us, and we've got Dan's here. Bill, first time joining us. Welcome. Eric had to hightail it out of the Bob Carpenter Center this afternoon. He had something going on tonight, so he wasn't able to join us. But of course, I'm here now. But we have Robert Battle with us. And I was starting to say, my freshman year at Drexel was 2002-2003, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is your freshman year, or my freshman year, your senior year. So my first Drexel game ever was down at Penn at the Palestra, where you guys won. And it was a few days before Thanksgiving. And then right after the new year was UNC Wilmington. You guys played at the DAC, and I think my parents went down too, and it was just a great, great day. And it got hooked me on Drexel basketball to the point where, you know, I just got home. We left Friday night. We drove down Virginia, stayed there a night, drove to Elon, went to the men's game, and then drove up, stayed overnight like in Quantico, and then went to the women's game in Delaware. So, you got me hooked on Drexel basketball. I loved watching you play. If I was going to name a handful of my favorite Drexel basketball players ever, you're right at the top of that list. So it's an honor really to have you, and welcome to our show here. So, and really just wanted to start out, you know, just, I know it's a really general question, but tell us about yourself, you know, where you're from and where you grew up. And we just want to learn as much about you as we can.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate the invite and getting the opportunity to be on. Like I said, you know, I don't get many invites, so it's always fun to come on and get to chat and share my story. So, and I remember those games. I remember those games very, very well. It's always nice to beat up on Uganda down at the Palestra. And unfortunately, I remember that UNC Wilmington game we lost. I know I missed a couple. I shot pretty well from the line, but we went to overtime, and I probably might have missed one or two. And unfortunately, they were our demise at the end of the year too. But me, I was born and raised here in Philly. I'm a Philadelphia guy through and through. Went to Northeast High School and went on to Drexel University. I was a two-sport athlete in high school. I was offered scholarships for both sports. And I actually committed to play football at at IUP. Mm. So the Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Mm. And I don't know, something didn't sit well with me. So like before the school year ended, I opted out of that, and plus I was playing basketball all year round. I was putting more time into basketball, and I hate the cold. So,
I'm then going to be able to see Phil every year. Yeah, we drove out there just to look around, and we were there in August. It's pretty close to Punxsutawney, but other than that, there's not much out there. But
no, it's I don't like the cold, and you know, so basketball it was. And, the funny thing is that NA, I didn't have a school. It was to the point where when we graduated, they still said I was going to IUP because, I was on the phone making, you know, my physics teacher helped me. We're calling schools like, hey, you know, I remember we called Delaware, University of Delaware. They didn't have any more scholarships left. Drexel didn't have any more scholarships left. We called Siena. They wanted to send me to a prep school out in Massachusetts. So I said, hell no to that. But then Drexel was going to send me to a prep school called Solbury Prep in New Hope, Pennsylvania. So we basically like agreed to that and saying like, okay, you know, after you do that year, you'll sign at Drexel. So I'm like, cool. We were working on financial aid. I went to visit. And I guess during that summer, I guess one of the junior college transfers or whatever that Drexel had fell through. And, you know, Steve Seymour got the job. And they brought me in and literally offered me the scholarship on the spot. Seymour always liked me. He was the ones that saw me on the circuit, in the AAU circuit. And that was my visit. I went in there with my family. We sat down. They took me outside on the corner. I stood on the corner of what is that? Arch, 33rd and Arch. They're like, hey, there's the cafeteria down that way. These are the dorms here. And that was my tour. I said, where do I sign? So, yeah, I got a full scholarship to play Division I basketball, which I knew I was a Division I player, but all throughout high school, I get a bunch of Division III letters, Division II, and I would just trash them, because I knew that I wasn't, a Division II or Division III player. So I would trash them, D3 letters would come a lot. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. I only had one other opportunity. I did a official visit to North Carolina A&T.
Oh, how about that?
And they were kind of deceitful because the guy said, hey, we got one more scholarship and we want you to have it. So we want you to come down. So I went down there and there was another Philly guy on the same visit, Fowler. I think it was James Fowler. I think his name was. I think he was like a Newman from St. John Newman. And went down there, played. In the morning we're leaving, I said, oh, so everything's good? He's like, oh, yeah, we gotta check out one more player. And I'm like, what? And they're like, we'll give you a call. The guy never called. So I reached out to them. I'm like, hey, like, what's the deal? It's like, oh, we tried to call you, but, the line was busy. And I'm like, God, listen. I know what you may think. Like, I didn't grow up poor. Like we had call waiting. Right? So if you called, somebody would have switched over, But yeah, that's how it came to be, man. I was Drexel. They were the only ones willing to really take a chance on me as a Division I basketball player.
Did you miss football then? I mean, what factored into picking football over basketball, football too?
I don't know. Like I said, I didn't like the cold. And then, I was playing basketball all year round. Like I would play in the summer, I was doing AAU, right? And then when it comes, like in the wintertime, you had the Donna Fiore Classic in Coshocton. So I was playing basketball all year round. Then like, the PAL leagues, positive image. I was always playing basketball. Football helped, but I never really knew how to work in football. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the public league, but at that time, public league football was, when you compare it to what it is now and those guys getting to participate in the PIAA and all that stuff, like Northeast is like a powerhouse now. Like they're sending guys to, Division I colleges all the time, NFL and things like that. But at that time we had a coach, we were like a wing T offense, like 46 belly and like 70 flood. Like it was, we didn't throw the ball, which I feel like it was kind of a blessing in disguise of why I played basketball, because if I played somewhere where they really threw the ball, I probably would have been somewhere in the Division I football program. Because my senior year, I had 11 catches, 131 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And I'm like, guys at other schools do that in one game. So even with that, I got the recognition and, offered a scholarship and, I even got to speak, got calls from a couple of Division I coaches because of my size, and my hands at the tight end position. But I don't know. All those things were going through. And they were going to allow me to play both sports at IUP. But I don't know. I went on a visit there. It was cool. Caught some passes for them and stuff. But I didn't like the cold. And then I'm thinking, like, it's going to be cold. And then, they're throwing a lot harder at that level. It might hurt my hand. Like, I don't know what I was thinking. But
I'm thinking about a Roxborough and – Ben Franklin Electrons game I went to, and it was a miracle if they got a punt off. And I think one time the kid dropped the snap on the punt and just chucked it down the field, and the guy returning caught the ball, thinking it was punted, but it was actually thrown.
So when you say that the quality not quite being there, I that registers with me, that's for sure. So
yeah, no, it was bad. You try to compare that to what those guys were doing at like Central Bucks West and stuff.
Oh yeah,
you
know, I remember those teams.
We look like Pop Warner League.
Yeah.
42, you know, 40 dives and stuff like that. That's what we were doing. You know, these guys over there like Pro Left ZXY, you know, all of this stuff.
So maybe this explains a lot too. I mean, I know part of why I always enjoy watching you play is, you know, you kind of came off as having a chip on your shoulder, like, you know, nothing was given to you and you always played hard. So did that factor in when you went to Drexel, like that you had something to prove?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll say this, and I could say this because they're good friends of mine, and they'll be honest with you and tell you this is what they did. So when I got to Drexel, I'm there. So I came into class with Ashley Howard, Doug Fairfax, and Tim Whitworth. Right, we're talking about Tim Whitworth, who at that time was, you know, I don't know if he still is, but at that time was the all-time leading scorer at Chestnut Hill Academy. All-time leading scorer Fairfax was at Haverford School. You know, Ash Howard. These are three guys that, if I recall correctly, are all city players. So they're like, oh, yeah, you know, you look at Ash Howard, like, oh, yeah, we got Doug Fairfax. They were already friends, him and Doug. We got Doug Fairfax. Oh, we got Tim Whitworth. Robert Battle, who is that? Like, who is this guy, Robert Battle? Like, what is, you know? And you know, they told me that. It was like, yo, who is this freaking guy? Like, why did they sign him, you know? But so I definitely came in with a chip on my shoulder, you know, to prove, you know, at that time to prove Seymour right. I'll tell you a quick story. He didn't make it easy on me. So, like, I had to work for it. Like, so I was a chubby kid. Just to tell you where it comes from real quick, I was a chubby kid. Like, I was 9 years old, and I was, like, 100 pounds. So I was a fat boy. So when I played Little League football, when you're supposed to – so we play pound ball. So when you're nine, you're around, what, 65? I'm supposed to be playing with the 65-pounders. I was too heavy for them. They pushed me up to the 75-pounders. I was too heavy for them. I had to go all the way up to the 90-pounders. I'm 9, 10 years old playing with teenagers. So I got cut my first year. I came back as a 10-year-old, started for a team that was full of teenagers. And even moving up there, I had to run before every game with a trash bag on because I was still pushing the weight limit. So even my friends were merciless. Those and my good friends, whose house I am now, both of my two guys, they're upstairs now. They tease me mercifully about being chubby and, you know, having, you know, I guess you could say kid breasts and all types of stuff. So that's where it came from. So I remember one time I was in there, I had like my little weights. I'm doing that. I'm in the park behind my house running with a trash bag on and things like that to lose weight. Till one day I came out and I took my shirt off and they couldn't say that anymore. So I got there. I went there. I was watching them play pickup. So I go down after I watched them. I go into Steve Seymour's office. He's like, hey, how's it going? What do those guys look like? So I only know one way to play. So I come from a really good program. Rest in peace. Greg Wright ran the Hunting Park Warriors program. He was really hard. So we talking about guy cuss you out in front of your mom, taught us to play the right way. Very defensive, you know, defensive minded. So that's where that came from. I was a very, you know, defense was my thing from the beginning. So there was nothing you could do to me that I haven't said. Like this guy, I mean, if this guy can call you the P word in front of your mom, like, I don't think it can get any worse than that. So I see them playing. I'm like, these guys aren't really playing. They're not playing hard. So when I went down there, he asked me, these guys are, you know, how to look up there. I'm like, yo, they don't really look like they're playing hard, you know. Seymour was the guy who would take that stuff and then repeat it in front of it. He's like, I got a freshman coming in here. Tell me that you guys weren't playing hard. I'm like, dude, really? Are you like, do you want me not to have, do you want me, are you trying to sabotage me on this team or what, man? Like, come on, man. You're not giving me a chance. These guys are going to hate me, you know? But, you know, their freshman year was rare. Oh, so the, what a lot of people don't know, this is exclusive right here. What a lot of people don't know, I was a redshirt. I came in, it was agreed that I was going to redshirt. So I was redshirted. So they went to preseason games without me. I was on campus. What happened was Joe Linderman got hurt. You know, Joe Linderman, you know, he always had like back issues, but Joe Linderman was a serious problem. I've seen this guy not practice for a whole week and then go to New Mexico and drop 28. But so he got hurt. DeCorey Rose, who was Malik Rose's younger brother, quit. Julius Williams, who actually wound up coming back when Brudier has a, you know, his graduate year to play, he quit. So he had, so you're down two bigs and another guy quit. So they come to me and say, hey, you know, do you want to come off redshirt? You know, me being an 18-year-old kid, what do I want to say? Hell yeah, I want to play. You know, looking back and understanding like what a redshirt could have done, I wish I probably could have, I would have stayed on. But it's like, yeah, you want to play. So I wound up playing maybe like 14 minutes a game my freshman year, led the team in blocks. It was a good run, but it was a little disheartening the sophomore year when my minutes decreased when Joe came back and things like that. Because I take, unless you give me a reason not to take your word for it, I'm gonna take your word for it. I'm trying to learn. So I'm assuming you know better, and I'm going to listen to that, and I'm going to learn. I'm going to lean into that with everything I have. So Seymour was like, you know, if you play defense, you're going to play and things like that. And I'm like, well, I'm the best defensive player on the team, but my minutes aren't reflecting that. So, and lucky me, like Linderman absolutely abused me my freshman year in practice every day. He had this spin move that was just, which I actually made my own later on after I got, you know, killed with it for a whole year. I learned how to defend him. So he was lucky because he had the only person in the league that could pretty much defend him on his team. So after that year, you know, Seymour got fired. They were making the move in the CAA. And it kind of sucks because I know he was really devastated. He's really excited about moving to the CAA. And then, you know, he got fired. And
that's interesting. And I guess it's helpful for me too, because you're filling in a part of the program's history I certainly don't know, because like I came in your senior year. I mean, what was the state of the program at that point? And then, you know, where was Seymour? What did people think about him? And why was he let go? Like, kind of take us through that transition period, I guess.
Yeah, so luckily, you know, it was a blessing for me that Bill Herrien, you know, coached well enough to, you know, to get a better opportunity elsewhere. He went to ECU because he didn't want me. So it worked out in my favor that Steve Seymour got a job. So Seymour brought me in. I think what happened is, so Seymour was kind of like my AAU coach. You know, he's like in your face. He's cussing you out like Bill Herrien. From what I know, a lot of people, you know, Herrien, you know, rub people the wrong way. So he's very like that. And I think what happens to a lot of assistant coaches, you know, it's just not Seymour. I think it's a lot of assistant coaches. They're trying to find their identity. So naturally, they take on the identity of the person they learn from. So I think instead of like having his own identity, he was kind of trying to be, he was being like a Herrien. So, you know, a lot of, you know, profanity, a lot of in your face, a lot of yelling. From what I hear, I guess he kind of rubbed some people the wrong way in the building. And we didn't have two very good years. So we had two losing seasons. So I think that's what played a part in, you know, into his dismissal. So
and when you got to the program, you know, your freshman year, you were coming up, they were coming off of a pretty pretty good run, right? Malik had left a couple of years before that, but the team was still pretty strong going into that, right?
Yeah. They were in good shape. You know, Harry had built a very nice program, and you know, they kept it in the family by promoting Seymour to the head coaching position. But that's pretty much all I know. Like, I didn't know much about Drexel at all. You know, when I came in, I just knew I seen that, you know, Malik Rose is there. They went to a couple tournaments. They won some games, and you know, they had the big upset of, you know, in the tournament. And so that's pretty much all I knew.
Now, what are you thinking, you know, with Bruiser coming in? And I guess the thing I really wonder, what was it like playing for Bruiser Flint?
Brew was like more of the same. Brew was like in your face. I mean, y'all been there.
Y'all, I was going to say, you're probably used to that. Yeah.
So to me, it didn't bother me. You know, nowadays, you know, kids are different, man. They can't do that. For me, Brew came in, so here's the story. We're all like on edge that summer. Okay, who's going to be the coach? I know they interviewed Bruiser, they interviewed Walt Fuller. I forget who else. But I know we were leaning towards, like, you know, as players, like learning. I was like, Walt Fuller's cool. Walt Fuller was alumni. Rest in peace, Walt Fuller. But then they was like, they hired Bruiser Flint. And I'm not going to lie. I don't know if I ever told Bruiser this when we talked, but I'm pretty sure, you know, when he came in, he was trying to get rid of us too, you know. But in my thought process, I'm like, why are we hiring, you know, Bruiser? Then he just get fired from UMass, you know, like, I don't, I'm a kid. Like, I don't know. I'm like, why are we hiring this, you know, in your mind? But Brew came in, he was, he was definitely trying to clean house. I mean, he was definitely trying to break us for sure. He was putting the test out there. So we had these individual workouts. And I know for the guards, it was like next to impossible. There was no guard who finished the whole workout except for Tim Whitworth. And that's because he didn't miss. So he was really putting us through. Even the bigs, like it was tough. The only break we had was like shooting a one-on-one free throw. God forbid you miss. Like, that's a short break. Then we had guys miss class. So that's when we were first introduced to 2020s. And at that time, we didn't know anything about that. I guess we thought we were doing conditioning with Seymour. This was a whole nother world. Like, this was, you know, the 20 suicides in 20 minutes.
I was going to say, well, what does that look like, 2020s?
Yeah, so basically, let's say they'll come in and say, okay, everybody, all the bigs have to make it in 40 seconds. The guards have to make it in 38 seconds. So you make it in 40 seconds, that means that your break is that the rest of that minute, 20 seconds. Now you're right on to the next one. So you got to do 20 of them. Now, here's the thing. You can take a break. You can miss two, but you got to make it up at the end. If you miss more than twice, then you have to come back the next day, do it over.
It's brutal.
So like, let's say you did five and then you're like, I can't do it anymore. You take it, you set that one out. So when everybody finishes at 20, you run one more to make that one up. So we had guys diving over the line, all types of them, just to make it. People throwing up. And it's funny because that's the slowest time. So you think you're in shape until you do that. 40, to start off at 40 is like once you got into it and you understood what it was like, you're praying for 40 because you're going every time you, every week you're going down. You're going down. So you're going 38, 40. Then you're going 36, 38. Then you're going 32, 34, you know. So you're going, I think we got all the way down to like 31, 33 or so, or 32, 34 or something like that. And I think some cast that came after us was down to like 30, 32. I don't know. But I will say it was like the best shape of my life.
What do you think? Was he trying to get guys to leave the team, or he's just trying to
Yeah. Okay. Oh, he was weeding. Yeah, he definitely was weeding folks out. Okay. You know, anytime you come in, you know, you're inheriting somebody else's team. You know, I'm not Bruiser's guy. Like, he didn't recruit me. He didn't recruit me. He didn't recruit Fairfax. He didn't recruit Ash Howard. He didn't recruit Tim Whitworth. He didn't recruit Phil Goss or Sean Brooks. So, you know, that's six people. That's half your team right there. It's not even yours. So I understand. Anytime a coach come in, you want to, if your job's on the line, you want to bring in your own people, you know? But what most people don't know, I had a friend who was talking to me about Alabama A&M. My mom was going to transfer to Alabama A&M. I'll tell you guys a story. So I went to Bruiser. Like, I was serious about this. I went to Bruiser and asked for my release. I went to compliance, asked for my release, and Bruiser was like, all right, you know, good luck to you. So that's true. So believe it or not, the only reason I stayed, who talked me into staying, was Tony Canaris, the vice president of the university. So I was pretty cool with Mr. Canaris. And, you know, I told him my plans, and he talked, and I was like, all right, I'm going to stay. But you see, it didn't matter for Brew either way. You know, that was an extra scholarship for him. He leave.
So we're glad you stayed, obviously. And I guess, what do you think? Do you feel like you proved yourself to him? And then, from where I'm sitting, you know, what I saw as a senior, I mean, you're an incredible player. I mean, what, did something turn the corner for you and really?
Yeah, it definitely turned out to be the best decision for me. It's funny because what was going to happened anyway, because I had my interview with Seymour, you know, when he found out we were going to CAA, it was going to be my junior year. He was like, look, I'm handing you basically the team, like, this is going to be your team and things like that. And it worked out the same way. But I will say it wasn't easy. And that's why I tried to tell those guys who came after me. I'm like, yo, why don't you guys get the ball? He's like, well, he tells them not to throw me the ball in the post. Like, when I talk to those guys, like, you know, like Daryl and these bigs, you know, like, he told them not to throw me the ball. I'm like, look, he said the same thing to me. He said, don't throw him the ball, this and that. So I made it a point to show him, you know, hey, y'all need to give me the ball. So I get great position. They throw me my score. And I did that until it turned into throwing the damn ball. Instead of don't throw the ball, and it's just throwing the damn ball, you know. So had probably my best year statistically was my junior year. Like, and I won't lie to you, I definitely felt robbed of the player of the year that year. They gave it to Brett Blizzard again. And I was definitely salty. I was definitely salty at the beginning. Because, you know, down there, they get their little, like, description before they say who. And you know if it's you or not once they start talking. You know, so they're like, this guy, you know, has been in the league, you know, this many, you know, this and that. And then right there, if they had a camera, you would see my face, like, drop. Because this is our first year in the league. Obviously, you're not talking about me. You know,
if you want to hop in there and sing, go for it. I don't want you to miss out. Yeah. See, blow out the candles and everything. Do what you got to do. He's got a birthday. All right. So, yeah, important stuff. We got to do our happy birthday and everything. I hope you didn't miss out on cake too and ice cream. So, I mean, that's important stuff, but that's my son. He's out there. But anyway. So, Rob, we want to pick up. So, if you don't mind taking us through your senior year. I mentioned UNC Wilmington game. I was looking at that schedule. It was amazing
a lot of close games. You did a lot of things that a lot of other Drexel teams beyond you couldn't do. Like, I think you, I can't remember, you're definitely very competitive with like ODU and VCU and George Mason, but tell us about your senior year and how that went.
So our senior year, well, first of all, when I came in with that group, me, Ashley, you know, Henry and Tim, even when we came on campus that time, the basketball team didn't have that great of a reputation. So that was our thing. We're like, all right, we're gonna make that change, and we're gonna go to the tournament. We're gonna take the team back to the tournament. You know, so senior year was that opportunity. Unfortunately, you know, Ash Howard was diagnosed with his issue. He, you know, he couldn't play anymore. But we had a good team. Me and, you know, Tim Woodworth, we had moved him to the four. The way we play, so we were doing a four out one in to highlight that shooting, and they give me space inside to work. And we had, you know, Eric Schmieder, a year older, you know, solidifying the perimeter defense, and then so we had really high expectations then. They still wasn't picking us too high. We definitely were picked higher than the year before. But that was a really great year. Like I said, my best statistical year was the year before, but it was still maintained, that senior year. And we really came into our own then, like being a team that can kind of, with that 4-on-1 in and being able to hold teams, to low scores. And being able to spread the floor, especially with Tim shooting at the four position. And what we would typically do, especially on defense, we would put Tim on, you know, on the best big. And then, you know, I would come off the weaker big and help, you know. So that worked out really great, especially against like ODU. You know, we would throw Tim on, hold on. So it worked out great because we would have him front, you know, Ricardo Marsh, and you know, I would come over and I would help. So it worked out great, you know, not having that great of defenders and allowing me to stand in the back and just rack up my block shots. So I say when I won that defensive player of the year, I was to, you know, thank my teammates for not. For sending them my way on purpose, of course, you know.
And maybe and before we go to your pro career, I guess maybe a good time. Like, I think, you know, that, and I'm thinking of watching that that final. And again, I mean, it was amazing season, but watching that final, my dorm room, watching Drexel on ESPN, seeing all the, I think the DAC pack was crowded behind the basket. And the other thing I noticed, I was looking through. There wasn't much information on the schedule from that year on the Drexel Dragons website, but it showed the attendance for all those games. And I think like the lowest attendance I saw was like 1900 people. So like I said, that really drew me in, you know, to going to the game. So I think that team deserves a lot of credit for them, what sprung forward, at least for the DAC pack and everything, even for the next 10 years. So I'm just curious, you said you've come to a few games this year. Where do you think the program is now, and where do you think it might be headed? Especially from somebody who saw a transition in the program once before.
So just to cap off that senior year real quick, losing to in the championship to UNC Wilmington, like I still haven't watched that whole game since then, but it was really cool. Unfortunately, we didn't get the performances we wanted from everybody, but like Canel Sanchez, who's my guy, he's still like, you know, my little brother. We're very close to this day. We just connected, you know, just from we connected through like that will, that sheer will and determination, and that, you know, through work ethic. So we would work out together and things like that. So I wasn't surprised that he was the one that showed up in the tournament. In that last game, but it was crazy because, you know, I remember scoring the first three baskets, And we traded, and I remember looking at the score, it was 6-6. And then the next time I looked at the score, it was 20-6. So they went on a 14-0 run. And we just ran out of time. We started picking up. If the game was 3 minutes longer, I think we would have pulled it out. But anyway, I forced myself to watch them celebrate. And then I held my tears, you know, before until I got a tunnel, because I didn't want all the cheerleaders to see me cry. But this
can
year,
I ask you something real quick about that.
Yeah.
Besides, yeah, I mean, Kanell was a freshman that year, which I think, you know, I want folks who weren't there at the time. You know, Kanell was a youngster for that tournament, and he came out. I was a party for him that run. But the game prior to the UNCW game was VCU. Mm-hmm. And there's Mike Litos, who's a writer and became the play-by-play guy for VCU, and a friend of mine, gives me a hard time because he's convinced that was a 2-point Drexel win. I don't know if you remember that game.
Yeah, yeah.
He's convinced you traveled on the last basket. He will say it every time I talk to him, you know, 3 months a year. I got to hear it 4 times a year. Battle walked. Will you tell him? Will you tell him for me now?
Listen, if that was a walk, it was as a result of a foul from the fat boy who was hacking me the whole game. That they never there's not even a reason he should have still been on the floor at the end of the game. He should have already been fouled out. And that was a trend that teams would do throughout the year. I don't know if y'all would recognize that certain games. If we played ODU, they had this big, strong Canadian that they used to bring off the bench. I don't remember his name. That never played except when they played us, to go in there to hack me, to foul me, to lean on me. I don't know if you remember the big sloppy 7-foot guy from Towson, Derek Good.
Yeah, I do.
He never played except when he played against us. So he just leaned on me like that with his arms like this. I'm like, this is a roof. And they wouldn't call foul. There was three guys. And then at JMU, there was this big, burly, ball-headed black kid. Last name was Whitehead. He never played. Well, he played us, you know. So I forget what that guy name was from VCU. He was a little shorter, but he was thicker, and he had long arms. I forget his name. But listen, we were in the huddle. He was talking about the plays. Like, yo, give me the ball. I don't care how you do it. I don't care what you draw up, but it needs to end of me getting the ball. And I got the ball and I scored with it. Tell him, what's his name, Mike? Tell him, stop being salty, man. It's over with. It's over with.
I mean, I remember that game too. I mean, not only did you hit the game-winning shot, but I think you also tipped away the next pass, I believe, that like really sealed the game up in that VCU game.
I come at him for the Drexel loss at VCU in like 2008 in the semifinals there, where Brew refused to double because Brew don't double anybody. Jamie Skeen, and it was like Jamie Skeen on one of our walk-ons in like overtime. It was a bad situation. But yeah, we go back and forth. So it's not all on Mike, is what I'm saying. But yeah, it's a fun rivalry.
I don't know where. Look, I wish I can go back and play the championship over again. Miss some free throws now, like back. But hey, man, listen. It is what it is. I played one of the best games of my life, and we still lost. So,
yeah, like I said, all I can think about that game is how, you know, not only did you, you know, really feed, you know, a good decade of, you know, enthusiasm at Drexel. And then I'm thinking, so what I did this weekend, my son's out there. And so it's been passed down a generation. So it's interesting talking to an athlete, and it's amazing how much you remember the detail of. And I'm sitting here thinking, man, that's like 20 years ago, and the detail you remember of those games. But no, that's the legacy you take away from that game, how you really created that atmosphere that carried on, and hoping to build that back up here in the coming years.
I think like from like – sorry, Battle, go ahead.
I got on SportsCenter top 10 plays that game too. For dunk on the guy, I don't even remember last name.
Callahan, the UNCW.
Terrell. No, it was the ballhead guy, Terrell. It was the pitcher that was in the deck for the longest until they took it, took it down, and I don't know why they did that, just to paint the walls white. But I have that poster in my house in the basement right now, because that's when they started putting the cameras in the backboard. I remember that because it was just from a series of free throws that we missed that kind of hurt us. I missed a couple. Phil Goss went to the free throw line, and he missed one of them. On one of them, I got the rebound in the middle of the paint, and I just got it and just, you know, went right over the big fella and got on. You know, I still remember Brad Daugherty. He was like, what did he say? He was like, I don't know who – he's like, I don't know who brought the peanut butter, but I know who brought the jam. You know, he's like Robert Bell, something like that. And I'm mad because I don't have that tape from ESPN that I made top 10 plays. And I know some people were, I've been trying to track it down forever, and I still haven't been able to find it, unfortunately.
We got to get Chris McKendry to listen to the pod. And she's got the pull. Drexel ties in the pull.
I mean, I think for me, that UNCW game and that run in general is one of the reasons why I'm as big of a fan as I am. And I know a number of the other guys who started the DAC Pack too are in the same boat. Like we were there for that trip, and just like, I don't know, being there for that run was amazing. We all lost our voices. I think we were outnumbered to those UNCW fans. I don't know how many. It must have been like 20-1 or something. And we were all just screaming and, you know, trying to keep up with them, and just seeing that and the bus ride home and everything that went on that trip just like really solidified, you know, all of us into, you know, making that trip every year. And we've been going 20 years straight until the pandemic was really stopped it. But I don't know if you remember this too, Rob, but we had an early on, like one of the first DAC Pack meetings, and you and Bruiser stopped in for like a second. It was Sean Joyce was running it. And you guys just stopped in to say hi to, like, you know, it meant a lot to the whole group that you just took some time out to, you know, say hi to the group. But that was the formation of the DAC Pack right there.
Yeah, that's important, man. You got to have, guys like you guys and you know, in those groups, man. That's what makes college basketball. And we greatly appreciate that, man. I've always appreciated you guys. And I'll tell you the most classic moment. the most classic moment was when you guys had the freaking oversized blunt for Rick Apodaca. How much trouble did you guys get in for that?
We were passing that thing around.
It's funny, man, because you make these relationships. I wound up running into Rick Apodaca when I was playing in a tournament out there, and you know, I was in Puerto Rico, and he's like, I call him Pretty Ricky, like he's the guy. Like I was at this club, I saw him, I was like, yo, what's up? He got me right to the foot, got us right in, you know. So that was cool, but I went way off tangent. The transition of the team, it looks like they have a decent foundation right now. Spiker's had a few years, so I think now these are the important years to see what he really can do as a coach. So I think like these next couple years will be crucial, you know, see where he's able to take the program. But I think that, I mean, he's done some decent recruiting, and he has some good players. Cam has been player of the year candidate in the league. He does very well. You know, James Butler has been very good. So he has a good nucleus. Unfortunately, it hasn't resulted in a ton of wins this year. But the guys are playing hard. But I think what's been the issue since I've been seeing it, and maybe it's just because I'm just, that's the way I'm wired, but it's defense, man. Like you just can't give up 80 points in 40 minutes. Can't do it.
games faster paced, you know, and they are playing at a higher tempo, right? So that'll do some of it, but
yeah,
point, like, yeah, it's different.
I mean, that's a lot of points, 80, 87 points in college. Just, you're not going to win many games that way.
So I got to ask you, you know, JB's been incredible for 4 years for Drexel and an asset to the team, but you've got a younger guy coming in Amari Williams. And, you know, I've been saying all season, kind of since he broke out this year a little bit, and you can still see he's raw. He's not there yet.
Yeah.
But, like, the tools-wise, like, I always say his upside is kind of Rob Battle, right? Like, I mean, that's he's got, you know, a similar style. It's the build and game and the whole thing. Have you seen him? And
I've only seen him in those games I've watched. But like I said, ultimately what it comes down to is you know, this right here, that ticker. And then just how bad do you want it? Do you want to make the lead? Do you want to? My thought process was always, you know, I'm going to play so well. And it's the same as a pro. I want to play so well that people look and be like, yo, what is he doing here? That's what I always wanted. Like, yo, he should be in the NBA. That's what I wanted people to look at. Like, why is he over here? He should be in the NBA. Or maybe, oh, why is he here? He should be in EuroLeague or whatever it is. So he should be like, yo, why is this dude here? He should be in the ACC or something like that. That should be his thought process. I want to dominate this league. Am I going to work on my right-hand jump hook? Or maybe just turning over the left shoulder. Maybe it's not a jump hook. Maybe you develop a turnaround, but you just have to be able to turn on both shoulders. So I think that's on him. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I haven't been around practice, so I don't know what his work ethic looks like. But I do know from what I saw, and even though, you know, JB is that guy, so he's playing a lot of minutes, and maybe he's not used to playing more minutes, but you got to be prepared, man. Like, he was having a good game, and I'm looking, and I'm like, he's tired. I'm looking, I'm like, yo, he's tired. He's able to make a difference, but now I got to come out because I'm tired. Or I'm not going to touch the ball, or I'm going to just chill here because I'm tired. And you haven't even been running. It's only been 4 minutes. You know, and what I used to do is I had to play a lot of minutes. I learned, nobody told me, but I just realized they was like, oh, it's a media timeout every 4 minutes. So that's how I broke the game down. I look, if I'm tired, I'm like, okay, I got, you know, one more minute, dead ball, and I get a break. And then you play hard that way. And then you gotta be in your mind like, okay, I got one foul or two fouls. You gotta learn how to still be aggressive while not fouling, while not getting in foul trouble. But at the end of the day, it's just what kind of work is he putting in behind the scenes. I haven't been able to be at practice, so I don't know. I don't know really anything about these guys. But I only know the guys I've seen in practice, which is just JB, you know, Cam. And I've actually practiced with those guys. And so I know them. But the other guys, I don't know them personally. I haven't seen what their work ethic looks like, but if that kid puts in the work, and he buys into whatever weight training, you know, weight room program they have him on, the kid will be an NBA player. Because that's what I did. I came from a school, once again, public league. We didn't know what a weight program was. We didn't have it. You look at these, you know, on the TV, you look at these high school football teams, they in there in the weight room. We didn't have that. We didn't have weight room days. We didn't have any of that. So when I got there, you know, I realized I wasn't a small guy. You know, I was like 6'6", 6'2", 220 already coming out of high school. So, but what I did when I got there, because I didn't know, if the strength coach said, you need to do this, this is a program you did, I went in there, I did it hard. And I got strong, and I became the strongest person on the team. And I can pretty much guarantee that I was strong. I was the strongest person in the CAA. and I was the strongest person in pretty much almost every year of every league I played in overseas. So at the end of the day, just for everybody, it sounds cliche, but it's really about how bad you want it and what type of work you're going to put in.
And these days, you touch on how things are different and communicating. And I don't know Amari personally, too, but you always in the back of your head, the transfer portal, and you know, these kids get challenged, and then all of a sudden it's like they're out, you know. But still, it's good to hear. Like, yeah, at the end of the day, it comes down to how much you're going to put in. You get in what you put out, really, is what it comes down to. So,
Nate, it was you and I were on think on the same line because we've talked at times, and I think this is one of these really easy things, traps that fans can walk into the weekend is watching the games, not being in the locker room, not knowing what's going on. You and I both said this team, it feels like at times doesn't have a killer instinct, right? Doesn't have the chip on the shoulder that you were talking that Rob had, right?
Yeah.
I think practically if you're a head coach right now and you're looking at that transfer portal and you know nobody's got to sit a year anymore and all of a sudden it's, you know, people are leaving left and right, you know, the goal is almost to retain players. If you keep your core together, if you have a good core and you can keep them together, right, you have an advantage on everybody else. But does that take away from challenging players? Does it take away, you know, you're going to have a harder time being a Bruiser Flint, right, and really going after guys? And kind of is what we're seeing on the floor – I guess, Rob, my question to you is, how would you coach a team? How would you motivate a team right now where you're worried about the back door, right, but you still want to motivate guys and push them? How would you balance that?
It's funny you mention that because I think that's initially what happened at the end of the role with Bruiser. I think that they weren't, you know, those kids didn't respond to that type. And, you know, they just wasn't hearing them anymore. So he couldn't get them to respond. But I think now at this point, you just have to be well-versed in how to relate to the kids and this generation. A good leader is able to decipher, okay, at Rob, like for example, if I'm on a team, you know, you can yell at him. I'm not going to say, I'm the type of person you yell at me, Seymour used to yell at me in my face, and I would get angry. I'm the type of person that's going to get angry, and I'm going to show you God. And I'm looking at Seymour dead in his face with anger in my eyes, and to the point where he was like yelling at me, and then stopped and said, "Don't look at me like you want to beat my ass," because I did. You know, like I did wanted to hit him so bad. That's what I wanted to do. But you just got to know, you got to take the time to learn those guys. There's going to be some players you can yell at, and there's going to be some players where you're going to have to pull them over and say, "Hey, listen, you know, I really need you. I really need you to go. Like, what is it that you want out of this?" You know, some players you have to do that to. What is it that you want out of this? You got to find what triggers them. I need to make, do you want to play pro? Do you want to make money doing this? Yeah, I have to. You know, my parents are doing, okay, well then if your plan is to help your parents and make money out of this, it's not going to happen with the effort that you're giving right now. So what's it going to be? So you may have to say that. And then another guy, you know, you can say like, "Hey, you're being a freaking pussy." Like, you know, like run, you know, or something like that, you know, stop playing like a soft ass. You can say that to some folks, and then some kids, you know, that'll put them with the deer in the headlights. And if you do that, you'll lose them. So I think it's just, you know, as a coach, you're going to have to learn those skills pretty quickly. Because if not, if you talk to everybody the same way, is just not going to work, because you got 12 players, either you got 12 on your roster, or 15, whatever it is, with all different personalities. And it's a little bit more tedious, it's more work, but you're going to have to figure out how to motivate each one, how to hit home with each one of them, at least the ones that are playing. But then even a few that are not playing, because you need them to go hard in practice to help push your guys that are playing. So that's really what it's about. That's how I would approach it, and make sure I'm able, you know, psychologically and as a leader, to be able to relate to each personality.
You know, Dan, and we were talking last week, you know, I think of Malik Martin, and Rob, I don't know how you know him, but, you know, kind of coming, and I guess what I'm thinking of is, and again, you're all I know as far as Drexel basketball, and even as following a college program close, you know, so, you know, you started kind of being that sort of that heart and soul kind of a player. And then you think beyond you, I mean, I think of Bashir Mason as a name that comes to mind, and, you know, whether you agree with that or not, but you're looking for that type of player in this team. And I see shades of Malik Martin in the way you played. So I don't know if you have a chance to see him or what your thoughts of him.
Which one? Which number is he?
Two, right? Yeah, number two.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He transferred in. He was at Monmouth, and it's his first year in the program.
Okay, so I think he was hurt one of the early games. Well, I saw him play the last game. Mm-hmm. The last game I went to, which was William and Mary.
Okay.
So. Okay, I'm gonna be honest. I wasn't very fond of his play. I think that was the one that he's kind of out of control.
Yeah, and like a lot of guys, it's like great game and bad game, back and forth. I think he's been more consistent the last number of games, but
yeah. So he's like really like,
yeah,
like downhill, like hard.
Yeah.
And that's good.
I think that's what I see. A guy who's him out, but you know.
But you gotta have the you gotta grasp the concept. Mm. And so the reason why I say that, like he's you're going hard, but you gotta be smart too. Mm. So the reason I say is they made a great comeback in that William and Mary game, forced a great turnover. I think they were down 3 or 2, whatever it was, had an opportunity to tie it or cut it to 1. They take the side out of bounds, give it to him, and I guess he's not really that great of a shooter. I don't know the team that well, but I assume because he just always pump fakes it. He doesn't shoot it. So instead of shooting, he pump fakes it and gets a charge. And I'm like, no. Like, why? You know, especially when a big fella had ran off a couple points. I'm like, yo, just throw it down in there. They don't have anybody. They had this, like, scrawny dude and William and Mary in the post. And I'm like, just give it to the big fella and back him down and shoot a jump hook.
But he gets shooting 37% from three this year, by the way, Malik.
Huh?
He was shooting 37% from three this year. Like, he can shoot it. He wasn't shooting it. You're right. And that charge was a killer. Was an absolute
that
killer.
Whole game, he was just pump fake and dry. He wouldn't shoot it. He didn't shoot it. So, yeah, it's just – I was looking, it was very erratic, but I love the motor. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I like Russell Westbrook, but the dude hasn't learned anything.
Like I said, that's another part of your legacy. Every Drexel team I look for, who's that, like, Robert Battle type player, that motor, you know what I mean? So, you know, but I know we're coming up in an hour, so I guess we have two options. One is, certainly, and we were going to talk about your pro career, because I'm really curious about that, and these guys are too. Or do we want to have you back some other time? Rob, what do you think?
Yeah. Oh, I would love to come back, man.
Okay.
I would love to come back. But there's some funny stories about that too. Just a preference, we'll close out and I'll set it up for next time. I was cut twice my first year overseas. Twice, back to back teams.
I'm really interested in it. It's like I spent some time in Japan when I was in the military and followed baseball, but I went to some basketball games and saw some games in Korea. So really, I'm really interested in foreign sports, period. Not that I'm an expert, but yeah, I have to believe there's a lot of interesting stories, you know, just in general, and then culturally too, adapting and all that sort of stuff. So it'll be just another good conversation. So. So we want to set it up and we'll figure that out. But before Dan and Bill is there too. Anything else before we wrap up here tonight? Anything else you wanted to touch on?
No, I want like 6 more hours. This is great. This is fantastic. So I want to thank you for your time, Rob.
For sure. I got some great stories for you when we go pro, for sure. I can't wait to come back.
Yeah. And before we go, again, huge win from the women's program. I just wanted to get them plugged in there, winning by one today down at Delaware. Another terrific game. Rob, you have a chance to watch the women at all this year?
I watched one game, the women's. They are really good, and my daughter likes to watch them too. Mm-hmm. She's 8. I remember seeing that girl, not last year, but I guess it was the year before that, because of the pandemic. What is her name? Is it Kiana or
Kishana Washington? Yeah.
Kishana
Washington. Yeah.
She was a prop. I saw her close the game out at home. They just gave her the ball at the top of the key and nobody could stand in front of her. Mm-hmm. Like she's definitely a problem. Her and Hannah playing together, the girls they've built an amazing program. With Denise starting it and Amy has taken the reins and hasn't missed a beat. Like it's the way they run and set up their program is second to none. Like she's done an awesome job, and I continue to wish them the best because they're killing. I really hope that they're able to go into that tournament, win it. Go back to the NCAA tournament and be the first team to win a game since Malik's team, and I think probably be the first women's team to win a game, yeah. At least since as far as we can remember, since we've been following basketball.
No, I'd be the first one. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, just really incredible. So who snapped the streak real quick?
Who beat them?
Yeah.
Was Charleston right at home?
Yeah. Why am I blanking on the game? Yeah, I was there. Yeah, we were. They
Charleston
had,
home.
Yeah, they so were.
We got up to what? 14.
Yeah, 14 or 15, one or the other. Yeah, and we were up. We were down 23 points and came back. We either tied it or got within one, and then they pulled it out at the end. So even that game was. It's they're such an exciting team to watch too. Not just good, but fun games. So. But I always want to end on a good word on the women's program. You know, and it's coming from you even better. So,
Well, I want to talk about, both teams were on the road this weekend, went 3-0. You're going to have to go back a while to find the last time that they swept a weekend for Drexel on both sides of the fence. So it's on the road. But it's a special weekend. It's a good time of year, right? Feb 20 to be peaking, to be feeling good about things. So hopefully a sign of things to come. But special game at Delaware. Nate, I think we'll probably record something else on the games from the weekend.
Yeah.
And we'll have that posted this week.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. So stay tuned. Before my battery dies, but again, Robert Battle, thank you very much for joining us. And look forward to talking to everybody again sometime soon. So.
All right. Thank you guys, man.
Thank you.